The other morning I watched three swans, two adults and a baby swan, eat bread that my wife Marianne tossed to them from the back of our boat. Then I watched them drink a little bit of salt water. Each one of them would dip their beaks under the water and drink it. Obviously, a swan can drink salt water and still live. I was having a conversation with a mariner, somebody who's very experienced in boating, was talking about the challenges that when people get marooned or end up in a lifeboat and run out of water, they are thinking that they're going to have the ability to drink salt water. But when they drink in what they believe to be life, they will start to be poisoned by that water, and ultimately it's going to kill them. You can't really drink salt water on the sea and survive it. The body is not going to be able to deal with the toxicity of so much salt. It's kind of funny, though, when you really think of it. You look at the salinity of salt water, more or less, is just like the salinity of human blood. And you would say, hey, well, why wouldn't I be able to drink it? Well, the cells of the body wouldn't be able to drink it. It would not be drinking in life to drink something so salty. So that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about drinking in life. But I want to expand the concept of drinking to be something more than ingesting liquids or beverages or fluids through our mouths. That's typically what we think of in terms of drinking. You know, put a glass to our mouths and pour some liquid into us. But I think we can expand it and think of drinking in life through more than just one of our five senses, but in fact, all of our five senses, and then even beyond that. So it's easy enough to imagine looking at something beautiful and drinking in energy through our eyes. And as we're doing that, we're looking at, I don't know, perhaps a fantastic sunrise or a sunset or something that we've been marveling at in the last few days, a moonrise. And as the moon came up over a set of trees and over the masts of sailboats anchored in the harbor, I was like, wow, this is amazingly beautiful. And it was a still night in each of these cases, so we're seeing the reflection of the moon off the water coming toward us. And it's like drinking in this beauty was real easy to do. We're using our eyes. We're using our minds to appreciate this experience. And we could also have done it in certain situations if there were sounds involved in it. But I did have Pandora playing in the background, beautiful music by George Winston and similar artists. So it was a beautiful backdrop auditorily to the visual experience that we were drinking in. And we could say that we do the same thing with our fingertips. If we were touching something really beautiful or elegant or silky or some other thing that was particularly lovely, we were like, oh, feel that. A lot of us, when we go shopping for clothing, use that technique. Just walk down the aisle and feel the material on shirts or blouses or slacks or dresses. And, you know, if we're hitting stuff that feels like burlap or real coarse material, we may move right on. That's not the kind of vibration or energy we want to drink into our fingertips and have it on our bodies at the same time. So we're looking for something that is going to feel better. I can imagine having done this and looking at a whole bunch of people doing the same thing as standing in the Louvre in Paris looking at the Mona Lisa. I wanted to have that experience so I could say I had that experience. But when you're standing there on the stone floor just admiring the beauty of the painting, but the fact that it's, you know, hundreds of years old and it's talked about and thought about and written about all the time, trying to discern what that smile was about. And it's so beautiful. And so you're not touching the photo because you're, you know, roped off so you can't get too close to it. So the only way to deal with it is to drink it in through your eyes and through your mind. It is your goal when you're standing there is not to find fault with the Mona Lisa. At least I can't imagine somebody traveling any distances. Oh, I want to go there and I want to not like the Mona Lisa. I suppose that's possible, but personally, I was interested in going there and marveling at its beauty and longevity. It seems like, well, we know this to be true. Everything is energy. Everything is energy. Now, that's how we normally talk in the work that I do. And probably lots of conversations go like that. Everything is energy. But probably a truer statement is everything is consciousness. Now, that statement comes from Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. And that makes sense to me. It was interesting. I was listening to an avowed atheist in the TED Talk, and he was going through the fact, his belief that we didn't really have free will. We were operating on programs that we had acquired over the course of our lives, and he didn't really have a belief that there was a God. No. And near the end of the talk, he did a couple of questions and answers. And somebody said, I am totally in agreement with you, you know, that there's no God. And I think there's no consciousness. And the lecturer went, whoa, that's not true. That is definitely not true. There is consciousness. There definitely is consciousness. And what neither of these gentlemen understood is that is God. Consciousness is God. And everything else is consciousness too. The variation, though, as you look around in your environment, and I'm looking around in my environment, I'm looking at a computer and bottles of water and a pen and a mouse and a tabletop and papers and stuff. It's like the difference between one form of consciousness and the other is the frequency of vibration. You know, a faster vibration as it increases becomes invisible to the human eye. But as it decreases, it becomes more and more solid, and then we can perceive it. There are some sounds that I cannot hear that my puppy dog can hear. So because I can't hear them, do they not they don't exist. They don't exist. I can't hear them. But my dog would say, yeah, they definitely exist. That vibration exists, and I hear it. And in fact, that's what's causing me to bark in reaction to it. So if everything is consciousness, and that's easy enough for me to get my mind around, I like it. Although the word consciousness is not that easy to grasp, but I'm willing to embrace it and have my own consciousness expand to understand it. And I think that's probably your intention as well. We look at this stuff and say, well, the coffee I drank this morning, the milk I drank this morning, the scrambled eggs I ate this morning, the toast I had this morning, the jam that was on my toast, all consciousness. I drank in that consciousness. Like, the water I had a sip of just before this call began, I took in that consciousness. Like, oh yeah, I drank it in. I drink it in because I presume it's life-enhancing. That's what I'm doing. This consciousness I'm taking in, I'm drinking in, is life. That's why I'm doing it. And we know from experience that you can feel enlivened when you look at something. It's exciting, it's thrilling, it's heartwarming, it's touching. It's like, how do I get more life just by looking at something? I think that's how we drink in life, by what we choose to focus our attention on and the way we translate it. So we can see forms of consciousness, hear them, smell them, taste them, touch them, think about them, and in turn, all those examples of consciousness can enter our own human consciousness, can enter our field. Well, not only do we know these experiences that make us feel enlivened, we know the opposite experiences too. When we see something or hear something, smell, taste, or touch, or think about certain things, and then feel depleted, as if our life force somehow just got reduced, taken, squashed, removed from us. Lately, I've been thinking and writing extensively on the topic of viewpoints. I'm trying to fully understand that because I think it's a valuable concept, valuable to me and what I do, valuable to me if I can understand it and become more effective at using and the application of viewpoints, and it can be more valuable to you and others. Now, this talk is not specifically about viewpoints, but when I think of it, viewpoints impact every talk that I do, every talk that you do, everything that you think about, everything that you view, every relationship that each one of us has, because in order to have a relationship, we've got to be somewhere. We've got to be located. And so that located, not only in time, in terms of space and time, right? I'm sitting in a chair in my hometown. It, like, that's where I'm located. But I also am viewing things from a certain perspective. I see things. And that, to me, is an important concept because it shapes how I increase or decrease or hold my consciousness at a certain level. My goal, ostensibly, and I'll verbalize this, is to increase or enhance my consciousness. Same as you. But our behaviors from moment to moment, our thoughts, our feelings, our words, our actions, may not be in harmony with that overriding purpose of to enhance our consciousness. I was looking at liquid in a glass, and there was a drinking straw in that glass. And I thought, you know, that straw is the conduit for the flow of energy from the reservoir, right, the glass, that container, and into the mouth of the person holding that glass. That's how that liquid, in this particular case, was going to move from the glass into the person through that straw. That was the conduit. That was the transport corridor, if you will. You go, oh, that's cool. Then I thought back to the swans, and then I thought, I put my attention on those swans, and then realized my attention is similar to a straw. It connects me to the object of my attention. So when we look at something, we are connecting our pipeline, our straw, our conduit through which energy is going to flow between us and the object of our attention. And it was like, oh, I use my attention to drink in life? Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought of it like that. I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. But in addition to that, and perhaps even more importantly, not only do we bring in life, we drink in life through our five senses and our thinking and however many other senses we have, when we bring it in, that willingness to bring it in is completely under the control of our own consciousness. If we're resistant or rejecting or closed or self-protective, you can imagine less energy is going to flow to us and from us. But as we're more open, more, I'll say, in the growth mode, more receptive, more accepting, more loving, more energy can flow between us through the pipeline of our attention. So I was looking at the swans, and I had a particular point of view about them, which said to me, I was filtering the energy that was entering through my eyes and my mind. And perhaps I was thinking the feeding of them was a good thing, and we wanted to care. We wanted to nurture and nourish them, right? That's part of the deal. And you go, oh, yeah. I was filtering this energy. I admire swans. They're beautiful. They're elegant. One of the things that's really appealing about them is their fidelity. Swans mate for life. And you just go, that might be a good lesson. Yeah, it could be a good lesson. And one of the other things that I've found appealing as I've watched them over the last week is there's a mother and a father and a baby. So when they travel together, they travel in a single file. The father in front, the baby in the middle, and the mother behind. Kind of, front bumper and rear bumper to protect the baby is the way I was looking at it. The other night I watched a group of Canadian geese land in the marina or the bay that I happen to be in. And I watch the father swan go after them and chase them away. He went after certain ones and he didn't go after others. Marianne and I were puzzled about it and wondering what the deal was. How does he know which ones to chase away and which ones to ignore? It's like, so vibrationally, he must pick up something. Then it dawned on me, perhaps he is chasing away male geese and not the female geese. Maybe it's the male-male conflict maybe that he's picking up, and he sees the male geese as being a potential threat to his mate and his baby. All of this is conjecture, but I found it real interesting to watch this going on and to admire it at the same time. So I was drinking in this demonstration of life force in these various consciousnesses going through it. It was really, really cool. Now, I can imagine in a boating area where we have seagulls and swan and those geese, is people could look at that and go, they crap on my boat and they do this and they drop stuff on the pavement or the docks, clams or scallops or oysters, trying to break them, and they can make a mess of stuff. And okay, I guess those are points of view that are acceptable. People can look at that. Oh, yeah, yep, that's true. That's true. But I was more interested in watching this caring that I was seeing, not only Marianne to the swans, but the swans for one another. I thought that was really, really cool. And because I was appreciating these forms of consciousness, it dawned on me I was drinking in more life and become more and more peaceful, more and more settled, more and more trusting that this has been designed. I had another experience yesterday of a slightly different kind, and it was very touching. There's a kind woman who rents an apartment from my brother John. Her name is Linda. And Linda came down to the boat with a baby bird in her hand and asked if we know how to help an injured bird. It seems that Linda's cat had caught this baby bird, but before it could kill it and eat it, Linda rescued the baby bird. But now she is distraught. She is really, really upset that this little thing is suffering. So it's wrapped in a towel. And she's got a little teeny container or a little cup of water. Like, do you know what to do to an injured bird? And other than to recognize that if its consciousness arrived at the conclusion that the body was not sustainable, then that consciousness would leave the vehicle, would get out of the body. But I thought, no, besides that, Linda, I don't know what to do. But she said, but if I offer it water, it drinks the water. It will drink in the water. And so she showed it to me as she held it the little baby in one hand and the water cup in another, and that baby dipped its beak and drank a little bit, put its head back, and did it a couple more times. It was, to me, drinking in life. I was touched, and I can feel the emotion of that right now, of Linda's sensitivity and her compassion for that little bird. I guess I shouldn't have been surprised, because in our conversations previous to yesterday, Linda told me and sent Marianne and I an animoto video of her time in Ghana doing, I'll say, relief work. She has a medical technician kind of background, EMT sort of thing, and she was going to go back to Ghana in October to be part of a charity and support the delivery of medical treatment to villagers, small villages in Ghana that have no medical staff, no doctors, no hospitals, no clinics or any sort like that. And she was going to go back. Now, this is a white woman who grew up in this, our hometown on Long Island, has no obvious connection to Ghana other than her humanity, other than her consciousness. So the same caringness that she was demonstrating with this little bird is obviously impelling or compelling or propelling her to go back to Ghana to render assistance to other baby birds who are not really birds, they're human beings. Beautiful little children that show up in her videos. You go, Thought that was very touching, that she saw this bird and she sees these kids and adults in Ghana as needing the same kind of care and protection, and has decided to do something about it. When I think of that bird, I thought, you know, from a consciousness standpoint, this is the natural order of things. Birds try to live and reproduce. Cats try to live and reproduce. Cats, if they can catch a bird, will catch a bird, kill it, and eat it for nutrition and nourishment. That's the natural order of things. The consciousness of the bird, it does what birds do, and the consciousness of the cat leads it to do what cats do. Wasn't good or bad. It's what birds and cats do. Thinking of Linda, thinking that, you know, there's more to drinking in life than drinking in life. Drinking in life has to have a purpose other than just, oh, what are you doing? I'm drinking in life. Oh, yeah, but you got a purpose? You got a reason? Right? And, of course, we could say that we drink in life so through the purpose that we have of drinking in life is we can enhance that life in our unique way. We all have different experiences, different thoughts, different backgrounds, different ideas, different talents, different passions. We enhance the life that we've taken in. And then through our outputs, the way we try to deliver that energy to improve and impact the lives of others. It's like, oh, yeah. I drink in life. I translate it in my unique way. And then I express it in one form or another to improve or help or assist other people. Seems pretty obvious that that's how it works. I think trees and plants drink in life, right? They drink in life through their roots and through their leaves. They drink in water and nutrition and minerals through their roots, and they respire, that is, breathe through their leaves. And you go, yeah. They drink in life in order to survive, and survival really involves, in a plant environment, of producing seeds, producing fruit that can grow and endure. So from one season to the next, you know, that trees can live X number of years, and then their offspring can live X number of years, and they propagate themselves. They endure. I think living things, not just plants, not just trees, not just animals, but all living things need to create. And to do that, we drink in life. Right? I mean, how else could we possibly survive or create anything if we didn't take it in the first place? And I think as we become more effective at drinking in life through our 5, 6, 7, 8, however many senses we have, and we drink in that high vibration, high frequency forms, such as love, laughter, generosity, compassion, fun, kindness, acceptance, gentleness, and a bunch of others, I think we position ourselves to create more of the same. If we draw that in, if we drink it in, and we translate it in our unique way to enhance it, seems pretty clear to me that we can look forward to a pretty appealing harvest. As human beings, we seem to have an ability. Perhaps it's unique. I don't know. I can't really speak for all the animals, but it seems to be that when we drink in life and we enhance or diminish it through the way we translate it, then all of a sudden we say, oh, we can modify its life-giving potential by the way we think, the way we feel, the way we speak, and the way we act. We're the translators. If I go back to that image of using the attention, our attention as our connecting straw or pipeline or conduit to whatever object we have our attention on, as this is how the energy flow between us and those objects occurs, then I think intention is the translative mechanism. It is the thing that we adjust, that improves or lowers the frequency of the energy that our attention just brought us. We could look at a horrible scene and we can translate it if our intention is to enhance it. We could look at a pile of dirt and admire it. We could love it. We could respect it. We could look at beautiful things and we could disrespect them. We could disregard them. We could demean them. So we really, with our intention, however we adjust our dial to from lower vibration up to higher vibration, and that would be a nice thing to be able to draw, this dial of intention. I suppose one of the dials would have to be get. A lot of people have that energy acquisition into, I got to get it. But we also know that we can give it. It requires both of those processes. If I were a plant that was trying to grow, I'd want to get energy, and then I would want to give it in the form of the fruit. An apple tree, I'm a fan of apple trees. I always admired the image of Johnny Appleseed when I was a kid. I thought that was one of the coolest stories and the coolest guys I had ever heard about. A guy that would go around planting apple trees and then move on, planting apple trees and then move on. John Chapman. It's a great story. You could search for it on Wikipedia. But an apple tree's consciousness, as wonderful it is, only allows it to produce apples from the life that it draws into itself. As humans, we have an amazing arrangement, an amazing spectrum, if you will, of energy patterns to decide how we can translate that life energy that we drink in, and then we can decide on what forms our output is going to have. What are we going to create? What effects do we want to create with the energy, with the life that we've been drinking in? That's a fantastic concept to me. In letter one of Christ's letters, I love the description that Christ gives when he's out in the desert after being baptized by John, and he has a realization of what God really is and how it behaves, unlike the God that he learned growing up based upon Judaism. You know, a punitive God, Jews like some, dislikes others, punishes people and with plagues and stuff. He said, nah, not true, not true. I saw the truth. I saw the truth. This God, divine consciousness, was always, always, always seeking to care for its creations in the following ways. And I find these to be so wonderfully reassuring just to know that this is on its way to us if we'll open the doors to our minds and our hearts. Just think of this. Here we are, wherever we happen to be at this moment, and any moment for that matter, and divine consciousness is sending, indicating, and offering consciousness or life force for us to drink in these ways for these purposes, for our growth on every level, mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually. It's available for us to use this consciousness to grow. Everything that we eat, if it doesn't come out of a factory, which I would suggest you want to avoid synthetic stuff, eat natural stuff. It comes out of the dirt or the water. And you go, we've been provided for. It's already been gifted to us. Healing. We can drink in consciousness to help us heal, help us to be protected. We can drink in the consciousness to fulfill our needs. And one of the interesting things, I mention this on a regular basis now to people, that Christ talks about in Christ's letters, is that you're going to notice as you start to go along here and understand this stuff, that your needs are being fulfilled before you even realize you have a need. I read that the first time, you know, 2.5, almost 3 years ago. I went, oh, that's kind of cool. And then I bet 6 or 8 months later, I said to Marianne, you know, there's a thing in the Christ letters that say this, and it is now happening. The answer to the question shows up before the question does. A little while later, maybe minutes or hours or a day, the question shows up. I have the answer. I got the answer a little while ago. Or the solution to a problem. I got the solution. I don't know I have a problem yet. Whoops. Now I'm aware I have a problem. The solution was already delivered to me. Wow. I'm getting what he says. Work is a fantastic way to move energy, to drink in life, and to express life as well. Having work is so fantastic. And it's one of the ways that the divine provides support and care for each of its creations on a cellular level, on an organ level, tissue level, and on an individual level. And you go, oh man, that is so cool. And then survival, rhythm, all within the system of spiritual law and order, the law of cause and effect that most of us refer to as we reap what we sow. And you go, that's cool. If those energy patterns for those 9 things that I just described, they exist, we go like, what do you want to drink in today? I want to drink in the consciousness that will heal me because I have a condition that shows I'm down a court. I'm a little anxious, I'm a little insecure. I want to drink in the consciousness of protection because I feel like I'm down a court. And, you know, all we have to do is use our attention and our intention to be able to drink in life like this. I think it's just so cool. Then when you realize it, if I drink in those things, and if the divine is working for me, by providing all of that and working in me, in my body, in my field, in my affairs, solving and providing solutions to problems and answers to questions and means to handle challenges. It also is seeking to work through me. So what do I do? What do I do? Now that I've been drinking in life and drinking in life and drinking in life and I'm good at drinking in life, what do I do with the life I've been drinking in? Translate it uniquely and then find somebody or something who would benefit from the delivery of these 9 items. Growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, rhythm, and an understanding of spiritual law and order, the law of cause and effect. Deliver energy or consciousness or awareness that these things are available to them, just like they're available to you and me. And you go, that would be wonderful fruit for us as individuals to bear and to be able to provide to other people. We wouldn't only be producing apples that could nourish somebody, but we do have the means to nourish somebody with our touch, with our smile, with our caring, with our hug, with a thought. We could support people just the way the divine is supporting people, using us as a delivery system. I would say divine consciousness working through us is both the evidence, it's the evidence that we drank in life and how we've enhanced it through our own consciousness and how we delivered it to the objects of our attention. Like, yep, I drank in life, I translated it, and I delivered it. That has got to be a good thing for our health, our spiritual, our mental, our emotional, and our physical health, and for the satisfaction of our purpose on earth in the first place, spiritual growth, growing into brotherly love, growing into balancing our self-interest with the self-interest of others. I think we drink in life to experience the source of all life. And as we become more and more aware of the support that divine consciousness, the source of all life, is providing to us, and then we help others to have that same experience in awareness that we've been blessed to grow into. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version from the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.